Oh, we've got so much to talk about. It is the news, according to me.
Yeah.
I'm kind of sticking on this music. I might do some other renditions of this particular one, but I think this is where I'm going to stay. I might even do a lyric version to this. I don't know. Possibly. We'll see how it goes. Might create some music that makes some sense on this whole thing. Hello, by the way. Good morning. It is the news according to me. It is February 27th. Almost the end of the month here. Tomorrow will be the 28th, and that's the end of the February's, and we're into the March. We're going to march on. We have, it is 10:09 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is 9:09 where I am. I am in a wonderful vacation capital of the world, a place called Waterloo, Iowa. It is, I will be here for the next 3 nights. I got in late last night. I will get done. I got a full day schedule here today again. I get done again today, about the same time, about midnight, 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. I come back in on the same flight that I came in last night. Go out, do some things, and then I'll be here all day on Saturday doing nothing. Tomorrow I do nothing here. Sit around, and I go to Chick-fil-A, I go to Longhorn. There's a Harbor Freight right across the street. This is kind of, I understand why people live here now. I was kind of wondering why anybody would stay here. If you got a Chick-fil-A, a Longhorn, and a Harbor Freight all within walking distance, I could live in a tent right here, and I would be a happy guy. I would spend all day and all night just basically going from one place to the next. I would just go Harbor Freight, you know, between meals. You know, Chick-fil-A for breakfast, maybe Chick-fil-A for lunch. Go to Longhorn for supper, and then maybe Chick-fil-A for dessert. Well, there's some other places around too that aren't too bad as well. But I mean, you know, once in a great while, you got to get pizza. But you know, I think there might even be a Costco. I should probably see if there's a Costco around here. There probably is. That's a whole other thing. Now it is a little chilly here right now in Waterloo, Iowa. The current temperature here in Waterloo is 37 degrees. Not too bad. When I got in last night, I think it was like, it felt like it was like 20 degrees outside. I think it was pretty cold. It was down in the lower 20s, I believe. But it was kind of chilly. Today's supposed to get up here. I think the high is supposed to be like 53 degrees here today. Of course, tomorrow it's only going to be 33 degrees. So it's going to be a little chillier tomorrow. But it's workable. It's going to be you know, overcast, but mostly sunny today. And it should be halfway decent tomorrow. It's not too bad. It's nice enough I can actually get out and do something without any, you know, not freezing too much. Once it gets down in the single digit numbers, it's hard to get outside and do anything at all. But hopefully the weather holds out. So I have a few things to talk about this morning. Today we have there's the whole global economic thing. It is Financial Friday. We usually talk about finances on Friday. There are some other things happening in the news that I want to kind of discuss. Of course, there's still a lot of ripple effect from Trump's State of the Union address on Tuesday night. The reaction from the left, of course, they really haven't had a whole lot to say. They realize that he kind of knocked it out of the park. He really did make the Democrats look bad, whether they like it or not. Among independents, if they were watching the show, if they were watching what was going on, I guarantee you, independents, I'm pretty sure, probably realized that he was being... He really put it to him. Now, whether or not you like the way he speaks or talks, whatever, that's a whole other issue. But he definitely made the contrast between where the Democrats are and he just basically called them crazy. He literally did call them crazy. And I thought it was quite telling how that ended up working out. He's right. They are nuts. They're just nuts. And it all stems around the whole Trump derangement syndrome and their rage, their bitter hatred. They've created a monster in their own minds of who Trump is, and it's just out of control. It is out of control. The guy, he's not who they claim he is, and he's just you can. It's just. I think people are finally realizing, hey, this guy is not, you know, he's just not who they're claiming he is. He really isn't even a serious conservative. That's where I kind of fall with the whole thing. I don't really consider him to be a constructionist. He's a transactional guy. He sees the benefit of most conservative principles and Republican principles, but he wants to be able to discuss, have transactions, make the country. He wants to make the country great. He does want to see the country thrive. He wants to take credit for it because that's all right. So if he can get it accomplished, he should deserve the credit for it. Nothing wrong with that. If the Democrats took credit for everything that they do, they take, you know, it's more like responsibility for the things that they do, which they don't do. They don't take responsibility for anything that they do. They mess things up and they don't take responsibility for it. Of course, the whole, again, like I was saying yesterday, you have to understand the whole speech thing. You know, the reason that Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib wanted to be there was to do it, to have a shout down. They thought they were going to get away with this whole thing where they were going to stand up to the president and they were going to shout him down and say, yeah, they killed two of our U.S., they killed two U.S. citizens. No, he did not kill two of the U.S. Yelling at a man saying, you killed two U.S. citizens. If you want to play that game, we could go down that road and I could point out to you how the Democrats and their policies have killed a lot more people than what the people who were killed by agents, federal agents who were wrestling or tussling with or provoking federal agents, trying to run them over with a car or whatever they were, trying to get away from them at the very least with their vehicle after they were told to stand down, running into one. And of course, being marginalized, it was just the whole thing. And then claiming that it was Trump's fault that they were dead. Trump's fault. These were our neighbors and he killed them. You know, Ilhan Omar doesn't care about her neighbors. She cares about herself. It's just one thing after another. You know, I want to make this public. If there is ever there was a time back here recently when I noticed that Arlington, Virginia was the number one town that was listening to my podcast. There were a lot of people there. A lot of listens, I should. I don't know there was a lot of people, but there was a lot of downloads of my podcast there all of a sudden. There's a guy, what's the guy's name? Is it Chris Chase? I think his name, I'm not sure if it's his name or not. He's kind of rapidly come onto the scene in YouTube, he's supposedly a specialist in psychology, government psyops, all kinds. I guess he worked if he did work for the CIA, they say you never stop working for the CIA. Now I'm hearing sirens. Now that I'm talking about it. He's talking about how people, YouTube influencers and creative, or, you know, social media influencers, how they get marginalized, how they get basically tricked into becoming influenced themselves by powers that be. And let me just say this. Apparently, the way they approach some people, now I don't have a big enough following that they probably don't really care about my. I guarantee you, after listening to what he said and how he explains how they do tend to. Now I'm not on the take for anything. I don't take. And they can approach me and say, well, it was an interesting thing. Let me just say this. If all of a sudden I'm involved in some kind of scandal and I disappear, let's just say it probably isn't true. First of all, if they are doing some really nefarious things, it's interesting. And yet it's also a little bit scary. And I don't know if it's happening under this administration or not. It probably is, because the powers that be, the deep state, the bureaucrats that behind the scenes that are just kind of always there, regardless of who the president is, regardless of what administration is there. There is a group of individuals out there that are very power hungry, much on the inside, and they kind of run things. they run a lot of things. And there is a very dark side of that part of our country that's going on behind the scenes that are trying to influence and manipulate people. And and it's a very serious, and it's a very real thing, first of all. It is a very real thing. And so this guy kind of confirms it. And it's just, as I was listening to this guy talk about this stuff, I think he was being interviewed by Sean Ryan. I heard about it through JP Reacts. I think JP Reacts. He was going over the interview that Sean Ryan was having with this guy, and it was just interesting that he went through all this stuff, and right away in my mind, I remembered back to all the clicks, if you want to call it that, I got from Arlington, Virginia. It kind of, you know, makes me think maybe I was getting checked out by someone there. You see, the Pentagon and most of those agencies are in that area. And I had, you know, multiple hundreds of hits from that area over a short period of time. So it's just kind of a interesting. So if you're listening to me, back off. Like I said, they could approach me, make any kind of offer, do any kind of threats, whatever they're going to do. I don't care. I'm an old man. I hope to get a few projects finished before I die. I want to get my bedroom cleaned up. I want to get the socks off the floor, and I can die in peace. I just want to get, you know, I'm going to live. The current dog I have right now, I'm hoping to live as long as he can live, and then I'm not sure if I'll even get another dog. But if I do, that's fine. But it's I at least want to live long enough for him to, you know, have a good life. And of course my wife. No, but of course. I mean, that's a whole different thing. We talk about human beings. In fact, I lost a very good friend last week, and it was very. I don't know if I talked about it or not. Still a little hard to talk about. Know this guy for 40 some years. Fellow aviator. Very mischievous guy, kind of a rough around the edges guy. Not sure that he was wasn't really a believer, but he was kind of always skirting around the edges, always asking me questions. Every time he was in town, we always talked. He grew up in the area where I live. He was living in Florida at the time, and unfortunately, had an episode with he was having some bad health issues, and ended up going to the hospital for one thing. It was kind of a weird deal where they sent him home. I don't think they should have sent him home. The medication they gave him wasn't right. Something was wrong, and. Ended up going back in, ended up with going back into the ER, had sepsis, and just didn't make it. I think he was 50, might have been 52 or 53 years old. I can't remember exactly. So yeah, it was a rough week. But anyway, you know, you get to this age where with human beings. There's a whole different relationship and a whole different thing with, you know, the eternity, facing eternity together. It's just, you know, that you've got that kind of anchor kind of thing going on. Sure, I don't want to leave the people I know here. I don't want people to leave me yet. But at the same time, there's this hope of an eternal future. Whereas, you know, my dog doesn't know that stuff. I don't know that. You know, I got to be there for this little creature. I think this little creature depends on me, and got to be responsible for the little guy. Little guy, he's 107 pounds, but yeah, he's quite the character. In my cup, I have Big Train chai, as well as just the I got some hotel creamer here. It's just the original whatever it is creamer, vanilla, French vanilla, I think it is. In my backup cup, this is the exciting part. This morning, my backup cup. I've got homemade. Peach tea. Now I ended up emptying the pitcher from home. I put what I had left in a thermos. In another cup, I just put all the peaches with what I had left with the tea, And I ended up with all that, and I ended up bringing the peaches along with me. So now today there is going to be, of course, Chick-fil-A will be in my future for lunch. The hotel here actually has a breakfast deal, which I'll be eating the next 3 days. But I had, or the next two more days, I guess. But I had a, this thermos now has all my peaches in it from the original gallon. So any sweet tea I get today from Chick-fil-A, I will be putting those peaches in there, or putting the tea in my thermos with those peaches, which will kind of be kind of the best of both worlds. I'll have, you know, Chick-fil-A sweet tea plus, and tomorrow's, you know, since Sunday, I guess I still have tomorrow, don't I? But Sunday I won't have any ability to get peach tea or sweet tea from Chick-fil-A, so I will have to, in fact, I probably won't get much of anything. We leave out of here about 5 o'clock in the morning on Sunday morning. I'll be getting home late in the day on Sunday. So Monday, all next week, there should be a show. I have enough time. I might actually have a live show, and I might even actually do it from the worldwide headquarters. That's kind of the plan next week to do that. I've got a lot to get done next week if the weather is permissible. I have a 4-day stretch that I can get things done, and I'm hoping to actually get a few projects nailed out as the weather starts to break. Might even go work on the boat. Who knows what's going to happen with all that? But anyway, we have a couple things to talk about. The whole POTUS speech thing was one, but I also want to talk about what's going on right now this week. Apparently, now remember the Clintons. Remember the Clintons? We had Bill Clinton. We had Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton was never president, by the way. I just want to remind everybody of that. She was a senator for a little while. She was also Secretary of State. Now, under Barack Obama. And of course, she was. This is all, you know, the way you get those kinds of positions is all the negotiation behind the scenes. Now they kind of pushed Hillary aside to get Barack Obama in 2008. She felt jilted by all of that. She felt like she deserved it in 2008. But then in 2016, of course, they brought her back and they decided to run her again. Of course, it was 8 years later. Now she's having health problems. She's having all kinds of other issues during that time, and she still does. She's still heavily medicated. As far as I know, this is, by the way, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a financial counselor. I'm not a worldwide economic global expert. This is all for entertainment purposes only. And everything I share is my opinion. And it's all allegedly. All the allegations are allegedly. I guess I should probably be starting my program here. I forgot to do that. I have so this whole program. With Hillary and Bill, they refused to come to a deposition by Congress. Now, there's this big argument about whether or not they wanted to be to have these depositions in public or in private. And what ended up happening was they said they weren't going to come to a private deposition. They wanted it to be in public. They wanted everybody to see it. They wanted want this to be in front of everybody so the world can see what's happening here. Well, they refused the deposition initially, and they were going to hold them in contempt. That's chargeable by, you know, that's a prison term type thing. And other people have gone to jail for that. So they were going to hold them in contempt for not coming to the deposition. Well, I guess, they worked out some kind of a deal. Now they're going to be going to go to the deposition. Now, understand, Hillary Clinton has a smirk on her face anytime she's being asked questions by Congress or anybody else. Now, she has flat out lied to Congress. Either she was lying or Comey was lying, one of the two, because what Comey said about what she said is that she was lying. He didn't come out and say that. He was very masterful in the way he did. This is the way they do this kind of stuff all the time. It's lawyer speak. It's this ability to talk without... They're very good at this kind of thing. So what ended up happening was, you know, when Hillary was being deposed initially under Congress about the whole Benghazi thing, and she came out, I think it was her emails and the server and all that stuff. It was all that stuff. She's been deposed several times by Congress. And every time they would ask a question, she would deflect. She's very good at not answering the question. I don't recall, whatever it is, like, you know, just very good at that kind of thing. Or she just flat out you know, as I remember, this was this. She said she only had one device. She had multiple devices. According to when Comey was asked, she said this. Was this true? He didn't say yes or no. He didn't say it was yet true or not. All he said was she had multiple devices and went on to explain some things. He had a statement for all these things. It was almost like an act, almost like he had it planned. All right. And he knew what the questions were going to be ahead of time, I guarantee you. A lot of times, they will only agree to come to these things based on knowing the questions ahead of time or having a general idea of what it's about. And they make negotiations on all this stuff. Now, sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. Now, if I were called in before Congress, they wouldn't give me the light of day. They wouldn't tell me anything about what they're going to call me in to ask me questions on. And of course, I'd have to be very careful how you handle that kind of thing. You can't. It's a game of chess with these people, and you almost have to be a lawyer in order to kind of navigate around some of these things, because you have to know the basis of everything that you're being asked and everything that you need to tell them. They are lawyers. They started off as lawyers. They've been playing this game for a long time. They understand. That's why she sits there with a smirk on her face, and she just. Acts like while they're asking her questions, she'll be looking off into space, drinking her little water. Like I'm drinking my chai right now, she's looking off, and it's just very contemptible. I would love to see the smirk washed off of her face permanently, to the point where she's hauled off and she needs to go to jail. There's just so many things she's done. If I did half the things she's done, I'd be in prison for life. It's just pathetic. Now, Bill Clinton, on the other hand, same thing. They both, you know, disagreed that they would, or basically said they wanted to be public. Now, I don't know. I think the depositions today, they're finally being asked questions in front of Congress. It's a congressional committee, I guess. And, of course, nothing will come of this. This has to do with the Epstein files. It has to do with all that kind of stuff. They will deflect. Equate. Oh well, so I rode on his plane. So all this happened too. Yeah. Well, what about you in the hot tub with that young lady? What about that picture? Oh well, that's I didn't know who she was. And it's not about whether or not it happened or not. It's whether or not they're gonna have all kinds of excuses because that's what 12-year-olds do. You have to understand again. These people have 12-year-old mentalities. The end justifies the means. All these things that you can just pretty much nail down about what the leftist. Agenda, what their whole mindset is, how the liberals think. It is. I should probably just write a book on all this stuff. Not a book, but like a, you know, how to track how a liberal thinks. It was interesting, you know, how you can once you figure out kind of their method or their methodology, their ideology, their core ideology. Once you kind of get that. Understood, you can really go from there and just kind of, you know, okay, this is the road they're going to go down. This is what they're saying. This is what they're going to go down. Now, Fetterman is pushing against that grain. He's actually, that's why I like Fetterman. If all the Democrats were like that, we could actually have a country that would move forward. I still disagree with a lot of things, but I disagree with some of the things Republicans do. And that's the whole point, is that we move forward as a country based on certain principles. They only have one principle, defend the Democrat Party. That's all they're about. That's the only thing they're about. Now, I want to go into. Let's see what we got here for. Let's see if this thing even works. I don't know if you're going to be able to hear this or not. I hope the computer's not too loud. The computer fan just kicked on, and I'm not sure it was going to do a real good job here. I know it's
good morning to you, my good man.
Oh, here it is. Yes.
Global economy.
Yeah.
Oh wow, you're going big with your opinions now, aren't you?
Yeah.
How do you see the whole world economic system working out in the next few years? Simple question, I guess. But big answers are what we need, a wise and intelligent one.
Yes, well, thank you for calling me the wise and intelligent one. That's, I'll just let that hang there for what it is. I'm not going to disagree with you on that. But the global economy, you know, how this whole thing works out, I know that's what we're going to talk about today. The interesting part of this is how there's so many things going on in the world right now. And of course, the United States is kind of in the mix, in the middle of a lot of things that are happening. And it all includes, elections in the UK, the effect that Russia has over Ukraine, as well as the general European Union, the European countries that are right there at their doorstep. It affects their economy, their ability to continue on with their programs and everything that they're doing, the mass immigration that has affected their countries, the mass immigration that has happened in some other countries as well, the mass exodus that has happened in some places. You have the global effect of everything. You know, Putin has kind of got his hands tied right now because he's so involved in Ukraine that he can't really help much with other places. For instance, right now with Iran, Russia is not really in a position where they can stretch themselves out and really help Iran at all. The only people, you know, there's maybe China and maybe some of the Arab nations could stand up for Iran. They won't. China might, just out of pure strategic ability that they could. I don't think they will. They've kind of washed their hands of the Russia-Ukraine conflict a little bit. They haven't gotten really involved in that other than to sell. They are selling some of their technology and equipment to there. Now, there's just been this remarkable stuff, or the remarked stuff about China coming out with some sixth-generation fighters, some of the stealth fighters that they've produced now, some of the things that they've produced. They've got like six of them, and I guess they're not even really functional. So there's the whole idea that, you know, part of a lot of what China does is for show. Same thing that Kim Jong-il, or whatever the guy's name, the dictator in North Korea. We haven't heard much about him lately, have we? He's been kind of off the radar. But he also, he was another guy who was doing all this nuclear testing and all this stuff was happening and it was all kind of going crazy with all that stuff. And all of a sudden that kind of quieted down. But he, it's all for show. Do they have a nuclear weapon or don't they? And you know, it's one of those things where would China even allow it? China basically kind of overshadows North Korea quite a bit and kind of keeps them contained. It's kind of their little slave labor camp with, you know, outside of their country, but within their control. They share a border with them, so it's kind of a... Now, so it's interesting, you know, how all this pans out with the world economy, because you have all these potential wars breaking out, conflicts breaking out, kinetic conflicts, the potential for a kinetic conflict between the U.S. and Iran right now, as well as Venezuela, some other places that it's, you know, and Trump's not messing around. He's not going to just do a policing action. He's not just going to do another Vietnam or another Iraq, Afghanistan type situation. If we do anything, we're going to go in and be done. And it's just going to be done. And we're going to get out. It's not going to be this long-term thing. At least that's the way, that's his philosophy, general philosophy. Now, I know that the powers that be in the military complex, military leaders don't always see it that way. However, that is what they're trained to do. I know that Hegseth's plan is that way. I think Hegseth is really, he's a student, and he's learning very quickly. I think that's one of the things we have to keep in mind. But all those things affect the global economy. Now, on top of that, you have oil, you have tariffs, all these other things that are happening put together. Now, so what do you think in response to all this stuff? What do you think about all that stuff? Or what is your general?
Actually, that's a very insightful assessment of the complex geopolitical landscape right now. Technically speaking, you're absolutely right that the interplay between Russia, China, Iran, and the U.S. is creating a delicate and precarious situation globally. The potential for escalation and unintended consequences is quite high. While the U.S. may want to avoid another protracted conflict, the military-industrial complex often has its own agenda. Mm-hmm. It will be fascinating to see how this all unfolds in the coming months and years.
I agree, and I appreciate you, saying that I'm right. That's something that's, more people need to talk about that. So speaking of that, here's a caller that doesn't always say I'm right. Let's see what this caller might say. Might be a historian.
Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, sure.
As you know, I'm a historian.
Of course.
I usually make that known to everyone I talk to.
Of course.
Has there been any thought about how history repeats itself?
Of course.
I mean, in light of current events, shouldn't we be looking into how things in the past have worked out with reflection on what has happened in the past? Let's talk about that.
Oh, okay.
Since I'm a historian, I can answer any questions you might
have
about
that.
Of course you can.
Yeah. This is where, I think... That maybe you can help us with this today, actually. Maybe you can look into the history of what has happened in the past in similar economic situations. I mean, you have to look at all the fundamentals of the economy, look at the state of the unrest, and as well as some of the good things that are happening with good treaties and that kind of thing that have been formed in the last few couple of years. The what is it called? The Accords, the Jacob Accords? What was it? It was something to that effect. Joshua Accords, whatever it was. Those kinds of things, the agreement among Arab nations, as well as some of the other conflicts that have been kind of resolved. Now, there's other conflicts that have come up, and most of those happened during the Biden administration. The Ukraine war happened then, the Israeli war situation with Gaza happened at that time. With all the conflicts that are happening in the world and the current, look at all the aspects of finances, oil, energy, data, the internet, all of the things that have to balance out in the middle of all this. How does it all come together with regard to what has happened in the past? Is there something relatable to a situation in time in the past, in the last 2,000 years, that we can equate to our current situation? Is that even possible right now? You as a historian, maybe you can answer that question. So go ahead. Feel free, caller. You have the floor. What say you?
Elena, well, you've certainly touched on a lot of complex geopolitical issues here. As a historian, I would encourage looking at past economic crises and how nations navavigated similar turbulent times. Analyzing the current fundamentals, from trade to oil prices to regional conflicts, could provide valuable context. Yeah. And reviewing past peace accords, like the Camp David Accords, might offer insights on how diplomacy has addressed regional tensions before. Uh-huh. There's a lot to unpack, but I'm happy to dive into the historical precedents if that would be helpful.
Yes, that's kind of what I'm asking, is for you to dive into the historical precedents. Can you do that, or is that something that you're able to do? Go ahead with that. Go right ahead. We're all waiting. The listeners are here. Go ahead, caller.
Elena. I see you're probing for historical parallels to our current complex global situation.
Now you're getting it.
Well, the interconnectedness of economics, geopolitics, and emerging technologies.
AI is not that smart. Not sure what the I stands for.
Perhaps the post-World War I period, with its volatile markets, shifting power dynamics, and technological disruptions, offers some relevant comparisons. Or one could look to the 19th century, when the rise of industrial capitalism, colonial expansion, and new communication networks created both great opportunity and great upheaval. Ultimately, history rarely provides a perfect analog, but studying past crises can illuminate the dynamics at play today and inform how we navigate these turbulent times. I'm happy.
Mm-hmm. She's happy. Well, she's happy, but she didn't. She hung up on me. So, I think that it's interesting. So, really, what is happening here, what she's equating this to, is turbulent times such as post-World War II, the Industrial Revolution, if you'll call it that, I would call it that, at the beginning of the 1900s, which we kind of got us into the Roaring Twenties with the help of Coca-Cola. We got into the Roaring Twenties and the boom time, of course, then ended up with a very big crash at the end of that because of some of the way things were, some of the things were handled. Wouldn't have had to have been that way. Now, sometimes a crash is just a reset, big reset, because of certain bubbles that happen within a certain time. By bubble,
sorry, could you say that again?
Yeah, Siri thinks I'm talking to her. My watch here. Just all kinds of technology flying around here at the show this morning, and nobody understands anything. Folks, the computers aren't going to take. If the computers do take over, and for one thing, I'm kind of wondering if this Elena character that calls in, if she is actually related to possibly related to AOC or Kamala Harris, because the first answer we got was pretty much a word salad that said nothing. Second answer was actually almost an answer. It was almost an answer that we could actually have a discussion with. But I think, and the more Of course, the more I would discuss at that point, the more context there would be, and the more the AI little character there would probably dive down into that subject. But I don't have time for that. We have another caller here on the line. I have to talk to you and to find out what this
guy. Now, hold on there, partner.
Oh, here we go,
partner.
I don't know
if you have any idea about what you're talking about.
I have no idea.
Isn't there a giant cabal that controls all of the world's money and trade?
Oh, here we go.
How does what any politician does have any effect on that?
Yeah. Well, it's a good question. It is a good question. I have, are the powers that be, the world manipulators, there's the World Bank, but the World Bank is not quite exactly what you think it is. It's kind of I would say it's more of what is that thing called? The UN, the United Nations. I would say it's more about that than anything. I think the UN, the World Bank are kind of, they're kind of hand in hand. The thing that really controls the nation, it involves the Federal Reserve, but the International Monetary Fund is the worldwide version of the Federal Reserve. That's kind of the way it runs. At least that's the way I understand it. Now, they are very protective of the U.S. dollar. Now, at some point, that's not saying they wouldn't trade everything for the yen if the yen all of a sudden became the most economic, or the strongest instrument. All they care about is wealth and power. It's all about greed, and it's all about power, and it's all about control. And so they're in the midst of all this stuff. They're trying to just continue to increase their wealth and power and their influence. At the core of it, doesn't matter what kind of instrument they use, whether it's the dollar or whether it's the yen or the euro, whatever it is, they're going to try to control all of that through the different trade negotiations that they do, and the way they fund things, and the way they allow different money to go through. Of course, the United States is one of the biggest players in that field. We are one of the most productive countries in the world. When you look at population, you think of, all these other countries, when we think of them, we think of them as the same size as us. They're not. The whole European Union, I think, is it 68 million, something like that, I think is the number. Five times that here. 350 million people in this country. Australia, I think, is around 30 million people. The difference there is it's huge. We're 10 times the size of Australia. We are, now look at Japan and India and some of those other countries. They have a lot more people, but the problem is they don't have the mechanization per capita that we do here. The automation, there are thousands and thousands of people in this country who have a shop that has tools that can automate, they can 3D print. I have one myself. I have a 3D printer. I have a plasma table I built myself that I can, automated CNC controlled plasma table, plasma cutting table, and cut steel, metal, that kind of thing. I got a router. That's a CNC controlled router. I've got a CNC controlled mill and a lathe. I've got, all the equipment that I've got. And I'm on the small end of that. There's a lot of people out there with hobby shops that are, much more equipped than I am. With regard to automation, when I was building, these little drums one time. They're called a cajon, and I have my own design of those, and I was building them. I'm probably going to go back to it again. It's kind of a unique design. Probably going to go back to doing that again at some point, but there was a point where I was building this stuff, and I had, it included, I had to have some 3D printed parts. I had to have some machined parts. I had to have, most of the things were done on the router. Most of it was made out of wood, and I had some just different kinds of parts that were doing different things. And I in the middle of doing all that, there were times I was just going around changing machines. There was a couple days where I went around, all I was doing is going from one machine. I have a laser machine as well to cut and as well as engrave things. So that was all, putting labels on things, cutting parts out, doing things with that, as well as the router itself doing things. The machine shop had to make little fasteners for certain parts of the mechanism on the inside of the cajon. And all this stuff was going on in the shop, and I was basically just walking around changing material and changing setups. And I, you know, I'd spend 3 hours doing that, and the machines were doing everything. It was as if, it was almost like I had five employees there. It was the most fascinating thing, and it's and yet I was a one man shop. Now with you know the advancements of what we can do now today, especially with AI, you can with the programming and programming G code and that kind of thing for the Mach 3 system and all. It's just it goes off the charts. And but that's I'm just one guy. Our country is full of this kind of stuff. I mean, it's just we have a lot of do-it-yourselfers, a lot of innovators, a lot of people who can do things mechanically that per capita, way beyond what most third world countries or any other even developing countries have. So you know there's pockets of those kinds of things happening, but there's just not you know most of that kind of thing happens here in the country. So it's kind of an interesting perspective, and I guess that's where I'm getting at with this. And I don't know what you think about all that. But what's your comment?
Hold on there, Sonny. I've been listening to this whole spiel, and I gotta say, you're really going off the rails here. Now I know you're excited about all this automation and machinery, but let's not forget the real powers that be behind all this. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the United Nations, the World Bank, the IMF. Mm-hmm. That's the real heart of the matter, if you ask me.
Yeah.
Those global institutions, they're the ones pulling the strings, controlling the flow of money and power around the world.
Yep.
It's not just about the latest gadgets and gizmos. It's about who's got their hands on the levers of the economy.
Yeah. That's, well, now, and it's interesting. Now, I wonder why the difference. Last time I used this program and I was asking questions, what was interesting to me was how it responded. I'm getting actual responses this time, which is, it's kind of interesting that that happened the way it did the last time. I don't know whether I was just off on some bend, if it picked up on something I said, because I'm looking over here at the transcript. It has a running transcript while I'm talking. And of course it absolutely sometimes really gets it wrong, what I'm saying. So I think sometimes it goes, that's basically what it's getting its information off of. Also when I'm talking to it itself, and I could continue the conversation. I could continue to go down this road. Like with Elena, I could have gone down the road with her, whatever. I could have gone down that road again longer, and it probably would have developed more context and probably would have even told me, you know, could have drilled down on some subjects even within that. That's kind of how this thing works. It kind of learns as you go, and it's learning what I'm saying. It's learning what the conversation is about, and it even, you know, is looking this stuff up as we're talking. So it's kind of this combination of it's a gooey mess of things, and so it kind of comes up with all this stuff. One more caller, and we'll go into this whole thing about the world economy and how everything is kind of parsing out.
Hello to you, fine sir. Oh, I just want to be upfront about something.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have called in before, and I occasionally call you a girl.
Yeah,
I know you're not a girl, but I just call everyone that.
Okay.
You know, kind of like people saying, dude, that's what that's all about.
Oh, okay.
So about my question.
Okay, yeah.
I guess I forgot why I called.
Oh, of course.
Oh, yeah, this global economy thing.
Yeah, okay.
What does it or how does it affect me here in my little small town when it comes to buying eggs?
Eggs. I guess if you, see, you got the chickens and they lay eggs. I guess if you have your own chickens in your little town there, the only reason I bring up the egg thing is probably the only reason she brings it up is that was a big deal with the Democrats for a while with this whole egg thing. Price of eggs was a big deal. They'll pick one thing that's gone up, and it's of course that was a lot of that had to do with the bird flu and some other things. Now, so that's how the effect on eggs, the price of eggs, happens when there's a global bird pandemic of some kind where they have to kill off a bunch of poultry, and of course that drives up the demand, the supply. So there's more demand than supply, and price of eggs goes up. So people just switch over to eating some other kind of protein or whatever they're doing. So that's how things change. Like that's how it affects you in your little town. Even though you might have somebody on the corner selling eggs for you know because they have their own chickens, now all of a sudden people want to go to that place. They'll go out of their way to get those chickens, those eggs, just because they'll stop over at their neighbor's place to get eggs because the store eggs are more expensive. When you're there at the store, you're willing to pay a little bit more for some things because you're there to get, you know, and that's how supermarkets work. They might have You know, say they have a sale on coffee, which brings everybody in. Well, while you're there, you pick up this, that, and the other thing, and those things might be marked up a little bit more to make up for what they lost on the coffee. So they have to do draw. They have what they call draw products that bring people in. Bread, milk, coffee. Those are the kinds of things that draw people in. And then, or they just draw them in with something else that they're looking for a particular demographic. This is where marketing, especially with AI, is going to play a huge role with analysis of a particular community, whatever it is, with the people in that community and how they're going to draw those. And they're going to specify what kind of, say that your local grocery store, maybe it's a chain, they are able to find out what kind of demographics there are in their community, what kind of things draw people in, what they're interested in, what kind of drinks they like, what kind of food they eat, what kind of snacks they like. They're going to possibly have a specific targeted market to those individuals with a coupon or whatever it is they have that they can bring those people in. And they literally can look at that. You know, they can send it to that person every time they pull up a web page, that advertisement might pop up. And in the process of that, they can customize coupons. So that'll draw that person in. Well, while they're there, they will also pick up other staples, other things. And that's where they'll make their, you know, their bread and butter, so to speak. They'll sell bread and butter. It's literally is bread and butter, or you know, soda pop, whatever it is that they're trying to sell. High margin products or high volume products. There are some that they sell are specialty things that they have a high margin markup because they have to have it on the shelf. They have to ask for more. Some of the things they just move on volume. Most gas stations don't make much money. Back when I was, my dad used to have a marina. We sold fuel for boats there at the marina. And of course this is back when fuel was probably 55, 60 cents a gallon. And I think for boat fuel, we didn't charge much more. We never had cars stopping in to get gas there. I filled my car up with gas. Cause my dad just, that's one of the things he did is let me fill my car up with gas. So I didn't have to pay for gas as a kid, but not much of it. I hardly ever stopped at a gas station. I had to work at a gas station for a while, but I had, I did the gas pumping. So we ended up, the margin that we had was 3 or 4 cents a gallon. Wasn't that much, but you pump, 1,000 gallons a week and it starts to add up. You go into quite a bit of, the profit margin is not as big per gallon, but the volume starts to go up. And so and of course, at that time, the cost of living was a tenth of what it is now, I think, something like that. You look at 50 cents a gallon compared to $5 a gallon. We're back to, I think I paid $2.47. This was at Costco. I paid $2.47 a gallon the other day for fuel for the car. Pretty good price. And I also paid retail for a car. I was on a trip. I had to pay just recently. I think it was $2.62, something like that. The prices are definitely coming down. Now, normally in the summertime, prices go down more. And we're right at that stage right now where we're going to see, I believe you will see, especially some discounts or some rewards type places where you can get fuel, you're going to be paying less than $2 a gallon again. You're probably going to see a gallon of gas around the $1.99, $1.90 mark, somewhere around that range. When that happens, that builds, that forms an economic, an economic boom. Now, this probably will happen before the end of summer as we're getting into, guess what, close to the elections. And as the economy starts to trickle down, the trillions of dollars that have come into the country for infrastructure, the things that are happening right now, the building, it's there's kind of this caboose effect where there's some things happening that kind of take a little bit of time to fall into place. So we'll have to see how all that pans out. I know I've talked a lot about it. I tend to go off on a bunny trail, but so just go ahead and feel free to jump in there anytime you want to interrupt me with anything. As I'm sure you're probably...
Okay, you got me, girl. Yeah, the egg situation is wild right now, huh?
Yeah.
That whole bird flu thing really sent prices skyrocketing.
Yeah.
But hey, at least your town's got that one spot selling fresh eggs for a steal.
Yeah.
Gotta love when you can skip the corporate grocery stores and support your local farmers. Am I right?
Yeah.
And, you know, those big supermarkets are getting so smart with their data analytics and targeted marketing these days.
Oh, I didn't know you paid attention.
Oh, you like avocado toast? Bam, here's a coupon. Crazy stuff. But hey, if it keeps the prices down, I'll take it. Can't wait to see those.
Yeah, well, that's where I think the thing that concerns me is how manipulative it can be. You know, one person gets a coupon, the other person doesn't. You know, it used to be coupons were fair. They just put them out in the newspaper. Everybody got a coupon. And, you know, it would draw everybody in or wouldn't draw everybody in or whatever it is. Now Harbor Freight constantly has coupons, all kinds of coupons, everything's coupons. If you pay regular price for anything at Harbor Freight, you're something's wrong with you. It's everything's on sale there. It's kind of weird. Now, I think they got sued at one point because they were always talking about how, you know, this retail price is this and we're, you know, marking it down to this. Everything was always marked down because it was kind of a phony way of doing things. But you never paid retail price for anything there. It was always, and I think somebody got in trouble for that. There was a lawsuit, class action lawsuit at one point. That might not have been Harbor Freight. It might have been Northern Tool or something. So it was somebody got in trouble for that. I think those days are gone. I don't think you're going to get trouble for that anymore. It's just because everybody's doing it now, and it's just standard marketing procedure. But yeah, I think that as we look at the global market, I think that the important thing to remember in all of this is how, again, we have to be very careful, not just the stock market, but our lives in general can be ruled and controlled and manipulated by either greed or fear. And in the midst of that, at the core of it, of course, I've always talked about this, and I think this, maybe it's Machiavellian, I don't know if it is, this idea of the man's basic core problem is selfishness. We are self-centered, self-motivated, selfishly motivated, I should say, not self-motivated, so that's a whole different issue. There's this issue with discipline. I think that almost every human being suffers to some degree. The more disciplined you can be with yourself, there's an interesting concept. And I've talked about this before. Maybe it's worth mentioning again. Since it's Friday, I'll give you something to think about through the weekend. If you say you go to a school system. Now, some people thrive in this environment, academia. I do not thrive in academia unless it's something I really, really want to know or learn. I can usually do it very well. I have to have a passion for it, or I just can't sit through a class. It's painful for me. I learn by doing. I'm just kind of the way we were just having this discussion with my wife and a couple friends the other night. About how I'm not, I just kind of dive in, try to break it. You know, I try to make something. It's otherwise known, sometimes called learning the hard way, because you're going to break stuff and you're going to make a mess of things and you're going to get all confused and frustrated and mad. It's just, and then there's those people who can sit down, read a book and kind of go through it and learn it. However, there's the application. You still have to do the application of it. And of course, those people typically will do it right, you know, as they go through it. Or they might make some mistakes and they learn. But I learn by making a lot of mistakes, but it also makes a mess of everything. So there's kind of those two payoffs of things. Now, having said that, it's not necessarily that one is better than the other, that you should try to change the way you learn, that if you learn one way or another, that's just the way you learn. That's just the way you're wired, the way you do things. In the midst of all of that, either way, however it is you learn, one of the things I think that's important to understand is that you have the discipline to motivate yourself to do something. It's.
I found this on the web.
Yeah, well, good. I'm not. We talk about self-discipline, and I learned this in going through the martial arts training when I was a young kid. We always talk about self-discipline. It was always, well, why are you learning this? Well, it's because for self-discipline. No, it's not self-discipline. At least not in the early ranks. And here's why. And I know I'm going kind of long on the show today, but I really think this is kind of a key point that I want to get across, because I think it's at the core of some human nature issues we have. It's one thing when you say you go to a church and that church has very strict rules and you have it's almost to the point of being legalistic, but they keep you kind of in line by the power of I guess, threat of being exiled or being shunned or being, you know, looked down upon or shamed or whatever it is, it keeps you in line. By the way, I don't care for that kind of, I don't like heavy-handed controlling church organizations, by the way. Maybe I'm a rebel. And some people need that. Some people need the structure. Some people need, especially when you're coming through addiction or whatever it is. Look, I've helped out with I was leading a little discipleship house for a while. There was guys who had addictions, had all kinds of problems in their lives, and it was, you have to have structure. You have to have an organized, disciplined life. Someone else has to provide you with that discipline externally. It's not an internal thing that happens automatically with us as human beings under normal circumstances. I learned this, like I said, I was in the martial arts. When I was going to class, you have the class is there. You have your instructor is there. All these things are happening around you. You're in a situation where you have, there's pressure from other individuals. This is why people go to a gym instead of just working out at home. It is very difficult to really push yourself at home. When I go to the gym, there's other people there watching me. And it tends to be this thing where you kind of push yourself a little harder. And you don't necessarily notice it. You don't even realize it. But just the awareness of that self-consciousness of people are watching me do this, I'm going to do one more rep. There is kind of that drive that happens. That's not necessarily self-discipline. That's an external force acting to discipline you or to drive you, to motivate you to do something. When you use a personal trainer, that personal trainer might get a couple more reps out of you because they're pushing you to do it. That's not self-discipline. You're not pushing yourself. Someone else is doing it. Academia largely is this kind of discipline, learning something at a schoolhouse. Now, you have the self-discipline to get yourself up, get yourself ready, to get yourself to school. But they set a deadline for you to get a particular assignment done. You're not setting that discipline. You're not setting that assignment for yourself. Someone else is setting it for you. You're learning about discipline, but not self-discipline. There's a difference there. Are you following what I'm putting down? That ability to really take rule of your life, and by that I just mean, I'm not saying you don't allow God to rule your life. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that you set yourself in a position to provide the structure for God to rule your life. You know, you do everything you can. You're sensitive to His, you know, His, how His Spirit is leading you in that. But say God gives you a vision for something. You need to say, okay, to get from point A to point B, I need to set a structure here. I need to set a discipline of how I'm going to get from point A to point B. And it might be, you know, say God gives you a vision for a ministry. Now, I'm not saying, okay, so God told me, or God showed me this vision for this ministry, this is the way I'm going to help people in this community, homeless, whatever it is. And so you set out on your own strength to do that. Now, that's a very different thing than operating in His Spirit. But you also have to have the discipline to put yourself before Him every day, to take His lead, to see what He's doing, to say, hey God, what am I doing today? You know, what is the plan to do this today? I'm gonna press forward into Your kingdom on my own motivation, not someone else's. And this is where, you know, there's not someone else telling you what to do, not showing up with a group and the group leader is telling you what to do. That's not self-discipline. There's nothing wrong with it. Don't get me wrong. It sets us in this mindset of getting down the road. Now, if you can never get any further with that, that's fine. But there's so much more that you can accomplish if you go into a mode of self-discipline, self-motivation, the ability to stick with a plan, develop a plan, and stay with that plan, however flexible it needs to be for God to be able to move through that. But at the same time, having that plan in place, but at least you have a plan. And it's a disciplined plan. You stay with it, you stay motivated in it, and you do it. just because you have a plan, it's, you know, your intentions are, you know, it's, you know, what they say about good intentions. So it's one of those things where we, but I learned that in martial arts because I knew that when I stepped away from class, I didn't necessarily work out the same way. The intensity of my workouts were not the same. I didn't have someone driving me and watching me and critiquing me, you know, telling me what I was doing wrong, and pushing me. Just the fact that there was someone there watching me was pushing me in and of itself. I don't tend to have that kind of motivation on my own. Now, I was very passionate about studying. I ended up becoming a black belt. I ended up having my own studio. I ended up being a business owner at that point, having a storefront, the whole thing. I was 19 years old when I did that. And that's where I learned self-discipline. That's when I learned that when I had a morning class, I had an evening class. I had a junior class, which was kids. And then I had a senior class right after that in the evening. In the morning, I just had a class that was an open class. It was like at 9 o'clock in the morning, whatever. People working second shift or weird shifts or kids that were off school, whatever was going on. They could come in the mornings. It was kind of an open class. In the afternoon, I had all afternoon to do whatever I wanted to do at the studio. And guess what? I finally developed a routine where I was there working out training in the afternoon for competitions, for kata competitions, for whatever it was. We call them forms competitions in Taekwondo. And I was there doing that kind of training. Then I got to the point where I would get up every morning. We had a lake that I lived on there in Indiana that was 17 miles around the whole lake to ride the bike. I rode my bike in the morning, and I rode my bike in the afternoon, right before training, right before class. It took me about, I think it was a little over an hour to go around the lake. I would get up in the morning early, ride around the lake. Right before class, right in the afternoon, I'd ride around the lake again, which was the worst time to do it because it was usually right before, it was right around rush hour. But the one highway that I went down was ridiculously busy. I wish I shouldn't have been doing that. I'm surprised I didn't get killed. But it was good training. I mean, I did it every day. I rode my bike about 34 miles every day, 5 days a week. And it was good training. But however, and I was also involved in BMX racing at the time, bicycle, motocross, whatever you call it. And that kind of training, of course, just gave me the engine. My legs were just ridiculous. I didn't know how to ride like the other kids did, but I was kind of in the semi-young adult stage at that point, and I was cleaning up. I was getting trophies every time I go. And I didn't go much. I kind of got out of it right away because I didn't want to get it. It was too expensive. It was just too expensive. I did it for a couple summers, and that was it. First summer, I was terrible. Second summer, I finally figured out, hey, I just need to go for it. Go stymie, go do this thing. Anyway, all right, so we have I've gone way over in my time here, folks. I do apologize. Monday, there may not be a show. What do we call it? What do we call the Monday show? I can't remember what we call it. We call it something. It has a name. I don't remember what it is. Something Monday. Anyway, Mishmash Monday, I guess it is. But we'll go on from there. But anyway, thanks for listening. Thanks for as we go into the weekend. Shabbat Shalom, by the way. We will go into this thing and talk more about how economics plays a part of everything, AI, all that stuff. The topic on Tuesday is going to be more about AI and the economic situation with AI as well. I talk about AI just about every day, but it's kind of what I'm saying. Apologize for that. Maybe not everybody's interested in that, but it's kind of fun. Kind of in the middle of all that stuff right now. Meantime, folks, God bless. Thank you for listening, and thanks for this funky music that's coming in. It's kind of cool. But, so we'll just end with it at that point, and I will, on Monday, I will see you.